Welcome to the Speed Trap Podcast. I'm Betsy.
And I'm Sophie. Join us weekly to stay updated on the latest racing news.
And to hear our thoughts and opinions on each topic.
And today we're doing an information lap for the week of March 7th.
So today, well, this week, let's just jump right into it. The most important thing to talk about, I think, is Haas.
Mm-hmm.
You already know what happened to Haas, and that is their biggest sponsor that I'm not going to attempt to pronounce. No, I'm going to attempt to pronounce. Uracali. Let's just call it that. Uracali.
You said it's so like Southern American. Uracali. Uralkali. Yeah, the Russian petrochemical giant.
You all know what I'm talking about, so it's okay.
Exactly.
There we go. Which is owned by Nikita Mazepin's father,
Dmitry
Mazepin.
Yeah.
And as we know, well, we suspect, I suppose. We all know, quote unquote, that Mazepin is a paid driver. No doubt about it. He's not good as a driver.
God, it's so hard to talk about this without sounding opportunistic with the news, you know?
What do you mean?
Like, it's hard to talk about this without it, you know, coming across as like clickbait or something, you know what I mean? So it's sort of like awkward to dance around this topic a little bit, you know? I mean, I think it's hard to sound serious when we should be about something that is could be a positive thing in Haas's case, but also in the short term, a very horrible thing that has happened to Haas.
No, for sure. Well, I think that's a good place to go, is they ended, Haas ended all contracts with both the title sponsor and one of their drivers, Nikita Mazepin.
Mm-hmm. And it comes in the wake of, obviously, if you are not living under a rock in the world, the Russian invasion of Ukraine, which we talked about it briefly last week when talking about our predictions. We brought up how Haas might be in hot water because of this whole thing, and it turns out they are. So if you're not following, which I'm sure all of you are, Russia invaded Ukraine, which sort of seemed like the most insane thing to do, geopolitically speaking. If you look at it factually, it's like it's never going to come out good for Russia or Ukraine, no matter which way it goes. So in retaliation, NATO and EU and a lot of Western countries and Western allied countries put sanctions, both hard and soft, onto Russia, essentially isolating it completely from the world. You know, cutting it off monetarily, taking it out of the SWIFT banking system, which, you know, essentially allows for all international transfer of currency, you know. So Russia's been cut off from that. Its central banks are losing all funding. You know, Russian people are, their inflation rate on their money is so bad that their money is basically worth nothing now, which inherently becomes a problem for big companies like Uralkali, which is Dmitry Mazepin's company, because they are also sanctioning oligarchs, which he essentially is. We know that he is an ally of Putin. We've seen him in meetings with Putin. There are pictures of him and Nikita Mazepin with Vladimir Putin, to put it, you know, pretty much blatantly, that they are associates of him. So he, in turn, has been sanctioned, probably, by Western business partners and governments that were in talks with him, especially because he's running an energy company, and a huge part of why the Russian invasion in Ukraine was seen as so, you know, maybe not going to be a good thing for Russia is because it was to do with the Nord 2 oil pipeline or gas pipeline, which, you know, provides the majority of was going to provide the majority of energy to the European continent. So essentially, this is an energy war, and it's the hand that Dmitry Mazepin deals in is energy. So he's obviously going to be directly affected. And because of that, monetarily, his value is going to drop. And so Haas, even if they did keep him on, probably would not be achieving the amount of financial balance that they should.
Right.
Like with Rich Energy, right? How that sort of became a scam. Right. It was sort of a similar thing. So I think...
Well, I think... Sorry, go ahead.
No, just to finish, I was going to say, I think because of that, that would have been a big reason as to why they detached themselves from Ural-Kali and Mazepin. But also, it could be seen as a moral soft sanction. You know, Haas is an American team, so they are, you know, Western. They are American, you know, notoriously Russia's biggest villain, kind of. And vice versa. So I think Jean Haas probably was like, maybe let's detach now while all the other companies are. So it could be seen as both, right? It could be seen as a financial necessity, and it could be seen as a moral like stance. So
yeah,
either way, I think
Formula One is
corrupt.
It's a notoriously political sport.
Totally.
Many, many ways.
Totally.
And I think also this could have been a good moment, because I am not sold on how much Haas wanted Mazepin to be their driver, as so much as they just needed the money. But if the money's no longer coming in, he's no longer a paid driver, and I don't think he really has the value to stay
totally
in the sport or in the team.
Totally.
And I think that's the main thing is, you know, wherever their morals lie, I don't know, because Formula One, let's be honest, doesn't have a heck of a lot of morals, right?
It's a very gray area for morals, for sure.
Exactly. I mean, at the end of the day, cash is king, as Lewis said.
Cool, Lewis Hamilton 2020. Love that.
Exactly. Had to do it. You know, that's really the point here.
It's the crux of the sport, really.
Yeah. So yeah. I think that whether you're talking about morals, whether you're talking about politics, this was the move that they needed to make in order to get a better driver. Mm-hmm. Because if we are still talking about cash as king, we also need to be aware that you will get more money if you have better drivers and start placing higher in the sport.
Totally.
So if you're no longer a backmarker, you know, this is kind of like Williams, right? Is when they didn't have the funding the last couple of years when Williams family was still running it lately. That breaks my heart.
But yeah.
They kind of had that same situation where they're just not getting enough money to get anywhere in the sport. And so I think that's where Haas is now. I think what's funny, though, is that Haas, as they've spoken pretty publicly about, is they have not been developing their 2021 car, or really their 2020 car. They've focused all of their resources into their 2022 car.
Right.
They used all of the Mazepin family, business money to develop this car just before the season started. They're no longer associated. So, I mean,
that's true.
Already got their value of that financial backing, without
potentially
a doubt.
We don't
and
know
now they
yet.
they can bring in a better driver now. This is not to say that they're going to have a suddenly amazing car and be competitive, but, you know, that's what I'm just saying is that.
No, yeah. I didn't even think about that.
They still got that money when it was most important.
No, yeah. I didn't even think about that. You're right. They totally have used that funding for this season, and now the funding's, whoever was providing it, is not going to be reaping the benefits of that at all. Wow. Okay. That's, you know, that's business 101 right there.
Right? Oh, this is insane. Like,
no, it's a completely unprecedented situation.
The circumstances that this is happening under and the reason why is just mind-baffling. Like,
you know,
I would not have predicted this.
I mean, I didn't think Russia was going to invade Ukraine. I thought it was a lot of posturing, and I thought it was a lot of provocation from NATO. And then I thought Putin was just going to go the diplomacy route, which he kept talking about, and then it happened, and I was like, well, now I don't know what to expect, because this is a totally unprecedented situation in modern European history, right? I mean, not really. I mean, talking about Crimea and then Georgia and, you know, Russia's history with that. But then currently it's like Ukraine's the biggest country in Europe, and it's such a delicate territory for NATO and Russia that I was like, there's no way, because it's too crazy. And this is basically like two nuclear powers going head to head. And it's like, you would never think that, because the whole point of arming your country with nukes is so that there is no possibility of war with each other, because if there is war, then it's the end of the world. So, like, you wouldn't expect this to happen. So I'm sure Haas was sort of like, maybe let's just say it's not going to happen. And then it happened. I'm sure there were as many people were a little bit shocked that it did. So I don't know what their preparation for this would have been, you know? And I mean, we saw... Do you have Nikita Mazepin's statement in front of you from that he tweeted it?
Yes, I do.
Because I think he did mention that he tried to negotiate to stay with the team, right? Separately.
I will read it. He says, "Dear fans and followers, I am very disappointed to hear that my F1 contract has been terminated. While I understand the difficulties the ruling from FIA plus my ongoing willingness to accept the conditions proposed in order to continue or completely ignore it, and just to insert point here. What he's talking about is that he was okay to race as neutral to his company." Mm-hmm. Or his country, not company.
Well, I guess both, really. I guess. That was a well, not Freudian slip. Yeah, Freudian slip. Kind of.
Anyway, to continue. So, completely ignored and no process was followed in this unilateral step. To those who have tried to understand, my eternal thanks. I have treasured my time in F1 and genuinely hope we can all be together again in better times. I will have more to say in coming days. Nikita." Prayer hand emoji.
So what it sounds like, right, is that Haas were basically giving them an ultimatum. There was not really, because they didn't give them a choice. So they basically were like, "You're out. There's no way you're getting your seat retained. So don't even try." But I wonder what his sort of, like you were saying, his proposition was probably, "I'll race under neutral flag," which he already is technically racing under a kind of neutral flag. He's, because Russian athletes are still not allowed to compete under Russia because of the Winter Olympics doping horrible scandal that happened, which, you know, you think that would be over, but then Russian figure skater this year was found doping, which was really sad, because I blame her coaches for that, because she's 15. There's no way that she was involved in that. Anyway, that's besides the point. So that was historical. Also, if you're interested in more about the Russian doping scandal, there's a brilliant documentary called Icarus. It's on Netflix, and it tracks doping, and then it goes down a rabbit hole and they meet the guy who coordinated the entire doping system for the Russian Olympics for Russia. So watch that if you're interested. But anyway, that led to already Russian athletes not competing under Russia, but then competing under the Russian Athletic Federation, which Mazepin was. And they weren't allowed to have, you know, symbols of Russia on any of their clothing or things like that. So it was interesting that there was a controversy with the Haas livery last season, right, where the front wing was the colors of the Russian flag. And so everyone was like, ugh, but then they got away with it. So he still would have been competing under something similar. I'm sure it wouldn't have been Russian Athletic Federation. It would have been something like neutral athlete, like just a white flag or something.
Yeah. It's like a white flag with like a little green something in the middle, yeah. I think.
Yeah. So, like, similar to how refugees compete under the Olympic flag in the Olympics, which I still think is a really cool thing that refugees have their own little team. I think that's very cool.
I know, it is.
We might be seeing a lot of Ukrainians in that team, unfortunately, if things don't go well, which it doesn't seem like they are. Which is really the main point here, right? Like, this is all just, what's the word? Like, bull crap on top of what the real horrible atrocities that are going on in the world. But it is to do with Formula One, which is why we're talking about it. And, you know, these sort of sanctions, you know, because you have to get to the root of, you know, political choice, which Russians don't really have, right? And so if you anger the people, that's one way to get the leader to change their mind about something. But it's very difficult because Russia's in such a unique situation.
Well, I think also, you know, it's the Mazepin family that's so specific to why this is a big deal. Because if Danny Kvyat was in the sport, right, or Robert Schwartzman was in F1, we would be talking about this in a very different way.
Yes.
Because it doesn't have this ties to just having like family sponsorship from a company. But also, Dmitry Mazepin's like position in like the government system.
He's in Russia. He's almost an advisor. Like Putin held a meeting.
He's in deep. You know what I mean? Like there's a relationship.
Personal relationship. Yeah.
Exactly. That like is very different than anything we would ever see from Schwarzman or Kvyat. You know what I mean? Like
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So that's it. That's why it does seem so, you know, close to the chest in a way, that there are such direct correlations to, mm-hmm. you know, the Duma and Putin and, you know, it's just wild. It's really, really wild. It's wild. So
it's crazy.
And it's hard to conceptualize this entire thing really and where it's going to go because it's so unpredictable with, you know, Russia making promises and then, you know, going back on them and, you know, like we really can't predict the future. So I don't think, you know, Western organizations are taking any risks or chances with Russian financing because it's literally gone down the drain. So,
yeah, I mean, I guess I'm just like worried, you know what I mean? Well, obviously, I'm worried for Ukraine and Russia. Like, this is good for neither of those countries. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
say whatever you want about Putin and things like that. But, I mean, at the end of the day, there's still Russian
people
who are not wanting this war either. Mm-hmm. And it's just awful. Like, the whole thing is just terrible. And I don't like it.
It's heartbreaking. Like it. It's heartbreaking.
But, I mean,
Putin, just stop Putin. We know you're listening. No. I wish that would work. I wish everybody would.
Just stop. Enough.
Yeah.
We get your point. We understand.
If only that was that easy, you know. God. Global politics.
Honestly, like, of course I'm worried about that. But my other worry is just how this will affect Formula One. Specifically, right? Like, I have other drivers who are Russian that, like, I don't want to see bad things happen to, like Danny Kvyat or Robert Schwarzman. Not that Kvyat is technically an active driver in Formula One. He's still a reserve driver for Alpine, I believe, unless something has changed with that recently. But I'm also worried about the backlash of this situation. You know what I mean? Like, there's going to be a lot of angry people who side with Mazepin. There's going to be a lot of people who are so happy that he's gone that there's going to be like a lot of really bad toxic energy between Formula One fans. And I don't want to see that. You know what I mean? Like, I hate to see that. And like the episode coming up in Drive to Survive about Mazepin, like the timing of that is just insane too.
Awkward.
Like, crazy awkward. But I mean, it could also give us a really interesting look into his life and the situation and where his father and the company is and all of that, because from right now, like, we're only seeing a very specific outside perspective.
I mean, we got a very interesting episode with the Stroll family last season and the takeover of Racing Point and becoming Aston Martin and things like that. So
exactly,
I think we probably get something similar. I think it's interesting that from what I've been reading, from what critics have been saying about early previews, that this episode is sort of like a character building, like, give him, you know, support episode. So I think that's a little bit awkward. I wonder if they'll have a special edit in there to be like, he is no longer an active Formula One driver, you know, maybe.
It could be,
they do like story arcs throughout the whole season. Like, we've had a few with Daniel specifically, but I imagine there's probably some stuff probably following him throughout the whole season too. I wonder if that'll change at all.
I mean, I think it's also, I don't know, it's so complicated, you know what I mean? Like, I'm just like not into the whole let's build a character arc out of someone or like build up a character in that way. Like, it's I just feel like that's not super authentic, and that bothers me. It bothers me. Like, I don't want to see false storylines or like things like that. Just
which,
like,
we have seen
this season.
We have
exactly
seen.
Like, we've seen it.
The whole Carlos Filando, you know.
That brings me to something else, is that Max, it was recently revealed that Max is not going to be a part of Drive to Survive this season.
Oh, he's not?
Yeah.
As in, like, the season that just filmed, or as in this year's filming?
I believe the one that was just filmed.
Awkward, since he's the champion.
Let me just double check that I did not dream that.
That would
possible.
That would be so awkward if that's true, because they have to tell the whole season story without involving the quote-unquote world champion.
Exactly.
That's weird.
Sorry.
I just need
to double check that I did not hallucinate this.
No, very interesting choice. But while you're talking about that, we've looked at potential...
No. Season 4. So this upcoming season, not this season.
No, this is season 4 that's coming out.
Oh, okay.
So the one that was just filmed. But he's not a part of it. Love that. Poor timing for his PR team, but okay.
Here, let me just say. Why Max Verstappen is boycotting Netflix's Drive to Survive season 4.
Because of the false storyline with Daniel in season 1.
He said, Max said, I'm just going to read some quotes here because it's interesting.
Okay.
He says, I understand that needs to be done to boost the popularity in America. Okay. He's not wrong, but he said...
No, he's not.
But from my side as a driver, I don't like being part of it. They faked a few rivalries, which don't really exist. So I decided not to be part of it and did not give any more interviews after that because there is nothing you can show. I am not really a dramatic show kind of person. I just want facts and real things to happen. Probably in the Netflix show, we will be rivals. He's talking about Lewis.
Lewis, yeah.
Both on and off the track. We one time bumped into each other walking, so probably that will be in there. The problem is that they will always position you in a way that they want. So whatever you say.
I remember that.
They will try to make you look reckless. I know exactly what he's talking about. Whatever fits the story of the series.
They shoulder checked each other on the way to a podium interview by accident, and they both apologized immediately, but it's going to be slow mode with dramatic music. I know exactly what he's talking about. No, he's right though. There is a lot of dramatization with it. So fair enough if that's not his cup of tea and he doesn't have to participate. Yeah. It's not in his racing contract, so fair enough.
I don't think he's not wrong, you know what I mean?
No,
I
just
think
he's not, yeah,
not at all, and I respect his decision. Respected Mercedes' decision in the first season that they didn't want to be part of it.
It's just poor PR choice, you know,
but this season to not be, oof.
I know, I was exactly.
But I think we'll get enough of the Red Bull understanding from Christian Horner for sure.
Oh, 100%. He's going to be Max's number one rep in the entire season. So you're
they
right.
Must be stumped, though, on how to handle that Abu Dhabi episode without Max.
Oh, true. It'll be Christian. You'll be like,
yeah.
And I radioed Massey and I said to him, unlap only 5 cars. No. I don't know. They'll probably play the radio messages too. That would be interesting.
But I'm excited because I think it's fun. It's fun.
Yeah.
We don't have to take it with a grain of salt because it's kind of reality TV-ish.
Yeah. Okay, just to circle back for 2 seconds and then we can finish talking about DTS because that was a little tangent.
Yeah, it was.
The potential most likely seat filler, that's a poor way to say it. The person who will take over Mazepin's seat is probably going to be Pietro Fittipaldi, who is Haas's reserve driver. I mean, it makes the most sense because he's going to be there anyway. He's been with the team. He has worked with the engineers before. He is an experienced Formula One driver, right? He raced in Abu Dhabi after Grosjean's accident. And he's a Fittipaldi, which is a big name in the sport, former world champions. And I was going to say Enzo, that's his brother. oh my God, I'm blanking. That's terrible.
I can't remember either.
Emerson. Names, Jesus. Emerson. I knew it began with an E. That's so terrible. I apologize to everybody listening. I did know his name. Emerson. So, and also he's Brazilian, which will be the first Brazilian driver since his uncle, who was after his grandfather. His uncle last competed, right?
What was his uncle's name?
It's not Bruno, is it? I'm thinking of Bruno Senna. That's what I'm thinking of.
Wait, then who
it
beat
was.
Lewis? Or when, who did Lewis, like, crush in Brazil, and it was, like, very upsetting because it was the last race?
Oh, you're talking about Felipe Massa?
Yeah, so, he's also Brazilian.
Yes, he is, but there was a Fittipaldi after him, I think.
There's so many Fittipaldis.
Was it Christian Fittipaldi? Or has he not done F1?
I don't know.
I don't think he's done F1.
Ayrton Senna.
Oh no, he did compete in F1. Christian Fittipaldi, who was the last Fittipaldi?
The last Fittipaldi or the last Brazilian?
He last competed in 1994. So I guess, well, was Bruno Senna after that? Did he? Yeah, I think he was. And that, yeah, he was, definitely. Why do I think he was the last Brazilian? No, because you're right, the last Brazilian was Felipe Massa. So.
What the hell am I talking about?
No. Yeah, so he'll be a Brazilian. He'll be a Brazilian, which will be fun, because we have Interlagos.
And it's also fun to just have, like, another Latin American driver.
Totally. I mean, Brazil's...
Not even, like... Brazil we don't currently have a Latin American driver. That's what I mean.
Brazil's a huge fan base for Formula One, too. Yeah. So that would be great.
Well, I mean, after Ayrton Senna, like...
Yeah. Felipe, too.
People are invested.
Like, Felipe's great.
Yeah, Felipe, too.
So, yeah, just to round out, it's probably going to be Pietro. I mean, other options, they could, you know, take Nico Hülkenberg, potentially. Probably won't, but he's another one. People are saying Oscar Piastri, probably not going to happen.
Nah.
Callum Ilott, he's competing in IndyCar, so I don't know if
I must say no on that one. I mean, yeah. I would love it.
Because that was originally supposed to be him, right? There was a contract in place, and then Mazepin swooped in and offered more money. So, yeah. So it would be nice to see that arc come to an end and get a Callum Ilott, Mick Schumacher team up.
Mm-hmm.
Wait,
what about Nelson Piquet? When did he race?
Oh, Nelson Piquet. He was ages ago. He was like world champion in like 84. What are you?
I don't know. Okay.
No, and then there was Nelson Piquet Jr. who competed as well. Right?
You know what's just weird to think about? What's just bizarre to think about?
No.
His grandchild is
Kvyat's
daughter.
Daughter. Forgot it was a girl. Daughter.
Isn't that weird? I don't know.
A little bit.
A little bit.
You know, Max is the stepfather, so.
I don't like it.
There's a lot of I feel like every Brazilian driver is like a relative of a former Brazilian driver, apart from Felipe Massa.
Yeah.
Whose son might become a Formula One driver.
Yeah, because there's like a bunch of Fittipaldis, there's a bunch of PKs, there's a bunch of Senna's.
Yeah.
I like it.
There you go. They keep it in the family in Brazil. Anyway, we were talking about Drive to Survive, and there was some interesting info came out this week, right? Where critics were talking about their early access to the dot. Mm-hmm. And there was a notable quote from Christian Horner already. So I think when you said Christian Horner will be covering Max's side of things, I think you're right, potentially.
Yeah.
So
he'll definitely be the villain of this season, there's no doubt.
Oh, for sure. So here's a quote from an article. Here we go. The documentary sets the tone by starting with Lewis Hamilton being interviewed on the podium after claiming his 7th world title in Abu Dhabi 2020. Which he got in Turkey, really. He won it in Turkey, but there you go. I guess it was sort of sealed in Abu Dhabi because it was the final season.
Nah,
anyway,
the finale.
And then Lewis on that podium said, quote, "I'm only just getting started." And then it cuts to Christian Horner saying, "I wish he'd just shut the F up," you know, under his breath, beneath the podium. So that's how they start the new season. And then here's something else. Cut to Wolff and Mercedes conducting their post-race media and both men together doing Sky Sports F1. Again, those Netflix cameras, which have been around for 4 years, long enough to be forgotten about, pick up Horner muttering as he leaves the interview, "effing Mercedes," quote, unquote, is what he said. So already we've got a better Christian Horner to start the season. So I think that will start that Red Bull v Mercedes arc, Red Bull v Lewis arc, Max v Lewis mm-hmm. arc mm-hmm. off mm-hmm. very strongly. So I am looking forward to Drive to Survive, but also like Max, I worry about false narratives that are, or dramatized, exaggerated narratives. But it's what makes it. I get that that's what makes entertainment, is like picking things and exaggerating them to create drama. But at the same time, it's like, if you're like a big fan, I get it for like people that are maybe haven't seen the sport or are new to the sport and they're trying to find people to like or drivers to support or teams to support, that you can set up these storylines. But if you're a fan of the sport and you follow the whole season and then you're watching a dramatic retelling of it, you're like, that's not right. That never happened.
Well, I think, you know what I don't know. But I think last season in particular was not good because I feel like there wasn't a heck of a lot of like really interesting giant events to do besides COVID. Like Mercedes was just going to win. Like there was just, it's like, oh, okay. Like the first race, it was like, oh, okay. They're like 30 seconds ahead of us. Like there's not even going to be competition there. Mm-hmm. But with this season, I feel like there was a lot of...
There's a natural story arc there.
There's a lot of like natural stories.
Natural like, you know, tropes of like heroes and villains and like blank and v blank and
silly season. There's plenty, I think, to go off of without having to like totally invent storylines.
Yeah,
maybe I could be completely wrong and they might do crazy stuff again, but you know, like I feel like they were sort of grasping at straws like last season in the McLaren episode where they tried to create like a conflict between Lando and Carlos. Mm-hmm. I would have respected that a heck of a lot more if they were like talking about how the transition of letting a driver go to another team, you have to start or have to stop telling them certain information that they might take away. Like that is far more interesting to me than like a fake rivalry between them. But I mean, also like that could cause tension between them because obviously...
Mm-hmm.
It could. I mean, it's just, I don't know. We'll see.
No, I think so.
We're gonna review DTS too, so.
Probably next week. We'll probably binge the whole thing at the weekend and then talk about it on Monday. Because it comes out on the 11th, I believe. So there's that. Which is exciting.
I work, so we might have to do it the following week. We'll figure it out.
That's rude. What am I gonna do? Anyway, so another thing to talk about. So Russia has been, I don't think we talked about it at all. We might have mentioned it, but Russia Grand Prix contract has been entirely terminated. So
yes.
that means
indefinitely.
There is literally in the immediate future no potential of a Russian Grand Prix ever happening. So that means potentially there are replacements coming up, which seems crazy because it's already a 23 race season, so it'll now be a 22 race season.
Do you think that they're gonna replace it?
I don't think they should, because I think, you know, I think the teams deserve a nap.
Yeah.
With all the triple headers that are going to be happening. So I think they shouldn't, but we saw on Twitter Sepang Circuit's official account, which is the Malaysian circuit, tweeting stuff like, and like the side eye emoji and stuff, like, has anybody, you know, called us yet? Or what did they say? Anyone mentioned Sepang is what they tweeted, so I was like, oh. Because
I mean, I would love that. I just don't know if it will happen this season, but I could see for a 2023 season that could sort of replace Russia.
Totally. I love Sepang. I think it's a great circuit. I mean, it's a Sebastian Vettel circuit, first and foremost. No, I mean, he's good at that circuit, but I mean, the last person to win at Sepang was Max, so it's a Red Bull circuit, kind of, I guess, because when Seb was winning it, he was at Red Bull.
That's true. That is true.
His last win there, though, was a Ferrari win, so I don't know. But the last two wins were Max and Daniel, so
Mm-hmm.
It could be a good thing for Red Bull, depending on their car for 2022, if Sepang comes back. Lewis has won there once, Fernando's won there once, Seb four times, Max once, Daniel once, so we've got four winners on the grid of that circuit currently driving, so could be fun. But then also there are young'uns like George and Lando and Alex and Nikki and Mick that have never driven there. Mm-hmm. So, and Yuki, how could I forget? So, I don't think Pierre would have driven there either. When did Pierre come into Formula 1? 2018 or 2017?
I'm trying to think.
Was it 17? It was the year before Charles, right? So it would have been...
Charles came in 20...
Charles was 2018.
18. He moved to Ferrari in 2019.
Yeah, so it was... Pierre was 2017.
17, yeah.
Yeah, so Pierre would have done it because that was the last year they raced there. Sepang's a great circuit. I like Sepang. I would like to see it come back. It'd be nice to see another non-European circuit added to the grid. You know, I don't think... Do we have Shanghai this year? No, right?
Let me double check.
The way I'm blanking. Do we also have Singapore back? I can't even remember.
Yeah, we have Singapore back.
We have Oh, thank God. I've missed Singapore. Well, Singapore's got an asterisk on it for now. I don't think we have Shanghai. No, we don't. No.
No, no Shanghai, but we have Singapore.
We have Singapore, and we have Suzuka too, so we've got two East Asian races happening. It'd be nice.
We have Suzuka? No, we don't.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we do. I believe we do. In October, we've got Suzuka.
Oh, we do.
Look, don't scare me like that. So it'd be nice to have another East Asian circuit back on the calendar, because I miss Shanghai, I miss Singapore, I miss Suzuka. So two out of three being back is pretty good. And it would also be nice to see potentially South Africa return, which I don't know if it will soon, but I think they should bring it back. If they want to keep calling it a world championship, they're missing a whole continent in it, you know? So that's another thing to think about. What potentially could be replacing the Russian Grand Prix in the future. If they are going to go down that route, which I think they will, if they're aiming for 23 races a season, which is still crazy to me.
So many.
Mm-hmm.
It is so many.
But I wouldn't be mad, because I enjoy the Asian circuits a lot.
But they also... No, I would too. But just like commenting on the length of it, they have... They're only doing like late March through late November, right? Like, they're trying to shorten the season too.
I think they're cutting into December, no?
Oh, are they?
I think so. Let's see. Oh, no, you're right. Abu Dhabi's the last week of November, or the second last week of November. That's crazy.
Like, they will be exhausted.
That's crazy. What? I don't understand that. That's wild.
It is.
I mean, this year we ran right up into the second week of December, I think.
Yeah.
Which is probably why winter break felt so short. Because we were getting car reveals in February, and so there was only really a month difference.
And it just seemed to, like, there was still so much to, like...
There was a hangover
with Abu Dhabi. Like, it was, like, still, like, thinking about it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So F1 fans constantly think about everything all the time. But, like, that was still, like, when are we going to get an update? When are we getting an update? Like, it had, like, that urgency to it.
And we still haven't got the complete results of that, which will be, I believe, the 18th. Of March, I think, is when they promised it, which is the day of FP1 for Bahrain, so...
Of course.
Love that. So...
I mean, what are they gonna say?
I don't know, and I'm sure Drive to Survive will reignite a lot of fury from people as well.
Yeah.
That's one episode, like, we just talked about it, but that's one episode that I think is gonna be very fascinating to see how they handle that narrative.
How do you handle that narrative?
They would have had to reverse engineer the whole arc of the doc for that season, I think, because Abu Dhabi was so informative over like a lot of stuff. Like it was like the whole Massey thing. I mean, throughout the season, he was like off. Yeah. But, you know, they probably wouldn't have even touched on that if it hadn't come to Abu Dhabi. So there'll be that arc. There'll be, like, the FIA corruption arc. Probably won't be covered since they're allowing Netflix to come in and film. So so that... I just genuinely wonder how, honestly, they'll be able to frame that whole thing.
Yes.
Because they're supposed to not have a bias, but I want... There's, like, it's impossible in this world to not have a bias. So I wonder what will be going on there. And I believe the production company that makes Drive to Survive is a British production company, Box to Box.
Box
to
Box?
Yeah. I believe they're British. So
yeah,
there is that too. So I don't know if that'll hold anything. Probably not. If they're ethically good documentarians, then it shouldn't hold any bias. But I don't know. We'll see.
Well, I think maybe what would actually really change it is Max just not being a voice on it.
That's true, because they can't really get what he's thinking if he doesn't participate. So, and that could have been, you know, a negative thing for him, right? Because then they can sort of, they have to make educated guesses about his sort of story side of it, so they might put some falsities into it. So maybe on the other side of it, Max should have participated in order to get more truth from his side of things, maybe.
Yeah.
Rather than them completely constructing something from what Christian Horner is saying, which is totally gonna be, you know, super biased in Max's side right. of things. And, you know, Christian Horner is a very arrogant person sometimes, so
yeah,
you know, we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
I hope it's okay, but you know, we've said that about past seasons, so we'll yes. see. I think to yes. be honest though, I do think it's a good show. I think Drive to Survive is a positive thing for Formula One, bringing in fans, you know, making it an accessible sport, because it is a very complex sport. So I think it does do good things in, you know, not dumbing down, but making it more, what's the word? Not, well, just making it accessible, you know?
Yeah.
Like, so.
Well, it's better. You get like, how do I want to say that? I think you feel a little bit more connected.
Mm-hmm.
To the drivers and the team principals and
yeah,
I mean the inside scoop of it, because unless you're like very dedicated fan, it's harder to get that
mm-hmm.
sort of like, I guess, intimacy between drivers yeah. and like the dynamics between the whole situation.
Yeah,
and so that's like a nice look into it. I mean, yes, it is going to be manufactured. It's just the way that it is.
Although I think. Another way to look at Drive to Survive is that Formula One is such an elite sport that it almost seems like unapproachable if you're just a regular person. So yeah. you're like, ooh, it's kind of pretentious. But when you watch it and you get to see that they're real people that are just
no, but it is super pretentious.
And, oh, it is. But like,
for sure,
it gives you this like you said, an intimate look into the people that participate. I mean, like. I think if you meet Daniel Ricciardo and you had no idea who he was, you wouldn't think he's this like elite athlete in this like pretentious political circus that is Formula right. One. You think he's
Orlando,
just,
especially
Orlando,
like...
right? Exactly. So I think you get to that's a good thing for their PR. I'm sure that the PR teams love Drive to Survive just for that aspect of it.
Absolutely.
So. That'll be
but
one
you also
of the reasons.
Have to be really careful.
Yeah. I'm sure that
really
there's
careful.
Contracts that say you don't get final say. We get to review and tell you what to. If there
Probably,
are things,
yeah.
sensitive things that we want taken out, we get final say.
Yeah.
Which is kind of, like, bad in terms of documentary making, but...
yeah.
But that's Formula One for you.
It's I mean,
business, baby.
We do the same thing when we have interviews. Like, sometimes... You mm-hmm. say stuff that you really shouldn't have, and...
Me specifically.
No, not you. I mean, like, if our guest or whatever was just wants to, like, edit something, like, yeah, we'll just say, like, sure, like, we'll take it out, like, no big deal.
Sure, it's a good faith thing.
Yeah, I'm not trying to catch them and be like, ooh, you're exposed now, you know.
No, yeah, for sure.
It's like the honor system, really, you know?
Yes, yeah, a good faith agreement. A gentleman's agreement, as they like to say in Formula One. But yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Is there any other news this week? I don't think so. It was mainly surrounding Haas.
And that, yeah, Mazepin.
Yeah. So insane. Keep your eyes and ears open, kiddos, for his replacement. I'm 100% sure it's going to be Pietro for the whole season, but you never know because, you know, you think they'd bring in, like, Nick or Stoffel for
whatever. I love Nick. But
and then they brought in Nico Hülkenberg, so you never know. Or, you think they'd let Nick and Stoffel do their job as the Mercedes reserve, and then you're like, no, George for 1 week.
JK.
In Mercedes. So, you never know, but...
You don't know. Unpredictable.
And Nico Hülkenberg likes to make a surprise return, as we know.
That's true.
You never know. But yeah, probably Pietro. So, good for him. Yeah. Excited for Pietro.
Me too.
Me too. I'd love that. He seems like a nice guy, too. Like, just genuinely. Yeah. Like, a down-to-earth nice guy. Also, he, like, recovered from a crazy accident at Spa. He broke both his legs.
His femurs.
Yeah, Eau Rouge, right?
Yeah.
Which is, just to finish on that, a good work in progress. I saw a tweet from the official Spa-Francorchamps circuit account, and it looks like they've made really good progress. And it looks a lot safer, to be honest. So,
yeah.
Good. Glad.
Yes.
Because that last season was like a huge deal. Very big deal. Yeah. So I'm glad they're taking drivers' opinions into account there.
And adding some drainage to it too.
Oh my god, much needed drainage. Look forward. I'm looking forward to seeing an actual race in Spa this season, hopefully. Fingers crossed. Because last season it was a washout. But
it was
unique.
We will get to see in a couple of days Bahrain winter testing on our screens.
Oh, yeah.
Which is exciting because that one will actually be televised.
Right. I need to put that in my calendar.
I do too.
I'm excited. I hope we get a more realistic view on what these cars are going to be. Which I think we probably will. It'll be closer because, I don't know, because they might bring a completely different car and then decide which one's better from Barcelona to Bahrain, so I don't know. But you never know. We'll see. Fingers crossed. But it'll be something and worth talking about.
The first race, not long after that.
2 weeks, I think.
Exciting.
So, we won't be doing any info laps probably soon. we did a lot of those over the winter break, but I think it's needed. There's been a lot of news, so yeah, we've got our predictions out of the way. We'll do a DTS episode. We'll do probably cover testing, and then we'll go straight into the Bahrain Grand Prix for 2022, which will be
fun. I'm so excited.
Me too.
So excited.
Me too.
At last, it is here.
Can't wait to see Alex Albon in a Formula One car again.
I can't even believe it. I need to actually see it. I still need to see it.
I had to round out the episode with an Alex Albon.
Should we have to talk about
this? I mean, it's obligatory at this point. It's like our inside joke. We have to bring up Alex. He's back every episode.
Yes. It's like, where's Waldo?
Where's Waldo? God. But yeah, guys, I'm sure you guys have a lot of opinions on what has been happening this week and a lot of excitement for Bahrain like we do. So do reach out to us. We'd love to hear from you. We're on social media at SpeedTrapPod on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And also, we have a longer form thing to say to us that doesn't fit in a DM or a tweet. We have an email address, speedtrappod@gmail.com.
That we do. And if you would love to donate to us, we would also love that. So you can head to anchor.fm/speed-trap-pod. And we are also trying to host weekly Twitter spaces so you guys can talk instead of us. So stay tuned on our social media pages, because we will post when we can make that happen. Work schedules for both of us are always a little bit wild on weekends and things like that, but we do our best to make sure we can get those to you guys so we can hear from you instead.
Thank you for listening to the Speed Trap Podcast.
As always, we appreciate your support.
To stay involved in the conversation, reach out to us on social media at Speed Trap Pod.
Speed Trap's official music was created and produced by Boxed Okami. You can find more of his work on Instagram at Boxed Okami.
See you next week.